fifth case, the United States versus Slimon. Mr. Schindler.
Good morning, Your Honors. For the record, my name is Ralph Schindler, appearing on behalf of the defendant, Murad Abu Slimon. Your Honor, I would ask that you turn to page 18 of my brief, and I'll be referring to a schedule that appears there, and also the supplemental brief, B-102 and B-104, which I believe contains some key documents relative to this case. As to the bulk of my argument, I will rest on the brief, but I'd like to address a couple of things before this court, and that is the legal standard applied principally by Judge Dara in determining the intended loss amount in this case. At page 16 of my brief, I copied some transcript of the court's determination, and I believe what the court was determining was, and I'd like to paraphrase, I think, what his conclusion is. I think Judge Dara concluded that it was reasonably foreseeable to this defendant that $20 million of actual losses could have resulted from his participation in this scheme. I think that's what he's saying is, Mr. Slimon, you were an idiot. You put these checks in the computer or you participated in that. $20 million of checks are laying out there someplace, and it was reasonably foreseeable to you that some portion of those may have been cashed, okay? So, but if we go to the sentencing guidelines and we look at 2B1.1 and the comments under 2B1.1, and the government says, well, he was using relevant conduct under 1B1.3, but I think you go from relevant conduct under 1B1.3, and then you go to determine the loss amount under 2B1.1. And if we look at the commentary under it, and we look at 2A4 of the commentary, it defines reasonably foreseeable pecuniary harm. And it says, for purposes of this guideline, reasonably foreseeable pecuniary harm means pecuniary harm that the defendant knew or under the circumstances reasonably should have known was a potential result of the offense. But if we go back and we think we're back in grammar school and we're diagramming sentences, that definition, reasonably foreseeable pecuniary harm, is then used in 2AI in the definition of actual loss. It's only found in 2AI under the definition of actual loss. It says actual loss means the reasonably foreseeable pecuniary harm that resulted from the offense. So, what Judge Dara determined is, well, there could have been a $20 million loss as a result of your activities. But there wasn't. It was stipulated that the actual loss in this case was only $263,000. So, the question of what was reasonably foreseeable pecuniary harm doesn't come into play or should not come into play in this decision. It was stipulated, again, that $263,000 was the actual result of this scheme. But let's go then to the evidence of what the intended loss amount actually was. The defendant admitted in his blind plea declaration to participating in a $4 million scheme. And the evidence indicating the $4 million scheme, first of all, there was the preliminary hearing, and the FBI agent before Judge Schenker, and the transcript is in the record, described the scheme. And the scheme was basically, we're going to ship checks over to Israel. We have a banker as part of the scheme. We're going to deposit these checks into a bank account, $4 million, and while the checks are in transit, we're going to take an advance on the funds. And that's the scheme. And that's the scheme that the FBI agent testified to. We had a court-appointed interpreter, Tanya Geis, who translated approximately 900 pages of documents that came from the Israeli Police Department when they crashed that end of the thing. And they said, yes, it's a $4 million scheme, basically. And then we also have the government's exhibit, which is at B-102 and B-104, the record. And in the brief at page 18, I have manually calculated what's in those various batches of checks. And if we look at B-102, we see a batch of checks made out to RVAL dated December 23rd, 2002, and they come to $4,351,000. And we know that that batch got shipped by DHL or some carrier and got intercepted, so they never made it to Israel. December 27, 2002, again, if we look at, I think it's on B-104, there's a bunch of checks, again, made payable to RVAL, dated December 27th. It comes out to $8,416,000. But you'll notice all those are large denomination checks. They're $500,000 checks. And the argument is that the co-schemers in Israel said, I can't deposit a $500,000 check into this account. They won't advance funds on such a large denomination of checks. So, like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, it's too big. We can't use it. So, December 30th, another batch. Again, large denomination checks, $500,000. Eight checks of $500,000 or thereabouts. Again, too large. Redo it. So then we go to January 3rd, and we see that at B-104, those checks, in fact, are less than $100,000 in denominations, again made payable to the same RVAL. And then we come to the January 17th, 2003, the checks with which they were arrested at O'Hare, and each of those are in denominations of less than $50,000 or $60,000. So we would submit that the evidence, the disputed evidence that the government put in, indicates that the scheme was a $4 million scheme. That these checks were passed from these defendants to the co-schemers in Israel, who then approved or disapproved, but they didn't make it into the stream of commerce. They passed within the group itself. So based on that, we would contend that the evidence is clear that this was a $4 million loss scheme and that the court's decision that, in fact, it was something more than that was clearly erroneous. We would ask the court to reverse based on that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schindler. Mr. Diamantados.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Tinos Diamantados, and I represent the appellee in this matter, the United States. Your Honors, the District Court did not commit clear error when it found that the intended loss amount exceeded $20 million. In fact, it's reasonable that that loss amount, Your Honors, was in fact $26 million, as the evidence before Judge Dara, the sentencing court, was before him that he found. Your Honors, I want to go through the mathematical calculations, and if there was any, if my figures weren't clear in the brief, I apologize to the court, and I'd like to go through those step by step because there is some question of how to calculate these figures to see what Judge Dara had before him when he determined the defendant's sentence. Your Honors, first, we have to start with the figure that is supported by the computer printout of checks printed at the Cicero apartment or the check factory. That figure is $38.6 million. That's the starting premise. Of that 38.6, the government argued that $9 million worth of checks that were torn up and found inside the Cicero apartment should be deducted from that amount. Now, Judge Dara agreed that that $9 million figure is a reasonable figure. Now, how do we know? As the defendant points out, that how do we know that there aren't these other torn-out checks somewhere outside the apartment or in the universe outside of this check factory that should also be attributable to deduct from that $38.6 million figure? Well, Your Honors, the reasonable inferences that are made were taken into consideration by Judge Dare, and he found that $9 million is a reasonable inference that $9 million is the total of discarded checks that should be deducted from that $38.6 million figure. And here's how. First, $9 million, Your Honors, is a substantial figure. It's not as though the government found and seized $10,000 worth of checks in a garbage can somewhere in that check factory, and then you weigh that $10,000 and on the other hand, 38.6, one may come to the conclusion that there's possibly other checks out there, given the fact that they generated such a substantial quantity of checks, that 10,000 isn't enough. But here we're not talking about 10,000, Your Honors. We're talking about $9 million worth of checks that were torn and discarded within that check factory. Now, defendant argues that there may be checks outside the Cicero apartment. That's not reasonable either, Your Honors, and here's why. A second reasonable inference that can be made, the first being the large denomination of destroyed checks, the second is that this check factory, it was an apartment, didn't have any furniture. There was no bedding in the apartment. There were no clothes in the apartment. There was a computer. There was a laptop and a printing device, and that's where the torn checks were found. Schemers, it is submitted to this court, are careful with their schemes. It's a reasonable inference that a schemer wouldn't take checks that they just generated off a printer, fraudulent checks, tear them up, take them out to the back dumpster, and throw them out there, or walk to the corner and throw those checks out in the dumpster at the corner. In fact, the fact that such a substantial quantity, $9 million worth of checks, were found within that apartment lends one to believe, as Judge Adair had the reasonable inference, that these $9 million found within the apartment, there's a reasonable inference that that's the universe of torn checks. So going back to that $38.6 million figure, second premise is that $9 million of torn checks should be deducted from that. That leaves one with a calculation of approximately $28 million. Then the government conceded at sentencing that $2 million should also be deducted from that amount, because that $2 million is from checks that predated the conspiracy that the defendant entered into, which is August of 2002. So that $2 million is taken off the table, which leaves us with $26 million, Your Honors. And that's really the figure that was put before Judge Dare, $26 million being over $20 million for purposes of the sentencing guidelines. Now, in the government's brief, we break that $26 million down into two figures, $16 million being four $4 million batches, and the other 10 being other payees. Now, those other payees could have included checks where RVAL was also the payee on those checks. In his reply brief, the defendant states that, well, the government is relying upon this check register. There's more than $16 million worth of checks written where RVAL is the payee, so the government must have gotten their numbers wrong. Now, again, if it's unclear on the brief, Your Honors, I apologize about that. I went to law school to avoid math, and these are the calculations I've got to go through again. But the $16 million worth that the government has contended in its brief are payable to RVAL, there's specific evidence because we seized those checks, Your Honors. And I'll explain how those $4 million batches were seized by the government.
Well, there's the $4 million that was sent to Israel but didn't. There was unhappiness due to the size, and the $8 million and two $4 million batches sent to Israel and seized, and then the $4 million found on the person. Those are the amounts you're talking about.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And to get specifically now to those $4 million batches, Your Honors, the first sent on December 23rd was sent to Israel. They were intercepted by Customs. That's the first $4 million batch. The second batch, December 27th, was the date on those. Another approximately $4 million worth of checks sent to Israel that were intercepted again. They were shipped via Federal Express. Customs, being alerted because of the first shipment, seized the second shipment. So that's the second batch of $4 million. The third, Your Honor, as Your Honor pointed out, the government actually was in possession of $1 million worth of checks. And how that happened is those checks were presented for payment in Israel and were presented to a New York bank to be cashed. The government seized those checks and has those $1 million worth of checks. The date on those checks corresponds to dates on the check register, and if you total the amount of checks that were printed on that day, it equals approximately $4 million. So that's the third batch of $4 million. Even though the government only has $1 million worth of those checks, looking at the date on those checks, there's a reasonable inference that can be drawn that $4 million worth of checks was sent to Israel, as the other two batches were approximately $4 million as well, Your Honors. The final batch was seized from co-defendant in this case, Mr. Rubino, when he was arrested at O'Hare Airport attempting to leave to go to Israel. And that's another $4 million batch representing the final $4 million. And curiously enough, the defendant's fingerprints are on that batch as well. That's the government's position, Your Honors. It's fairly straightforward when you work through the math that there's four $4 million batches totaling $16 million, and then there's $10 million out there in other checks that bring us to that $26 million figure. That's the figure Judge Darrow relied upon in sentencing.
The defendant argues, though, that those that series of $4 million batches of checks should not be aggregated because each subsequent one was meant to replace the others that were intercepted or otherwise didn't get negotiated.
Your Honor, defendant's argument is not well-founded, and here's why. If each of these batches, as the defendant contends, was a simple replacement of the previous batch that was no good, that they looked at and said, hey, these are never going to fly, tear them up, send us another batch, why wouldn't that second or third or fourth batch be a mirror image of the first batch that they rejected? In fact, they're different check numbers. Some of them had different payees. There is nothing to indicate that they were simply rejecting checks and the second batch was sent was meant to be a replacement. Further, Judge, it's important that $1 million worth of checks were attempted to be cashed and were found in New York, because that indicates that if they got their hands on these checks, if they made them to Israel, the reasonable inference is that the intended loss is that all those checks would eventually be cashed. They weren't torn up, they weren't destroyed, they weren't found in the garbage can at the check factory in Cicero, Illinois. They were out there. They sent them via Federal X. They had different check numbers. That's what Judge Darrow relied upon. And that's ample circumstantial evidence, as well as direct evidence of the actual checks that were seized and intercepted by Customs, that the intended loss in this case was over $20 million, namely $26 million.
Well, the fact that there were different check numbers, I mean, why would they have to repeat the same check number? They would just issue more checks. I mean, at different numbers. I mean, that doesn't... I mean, I understand your argument, but that's not very persuasive, the fact that they didn't replace check 004 with another check 004, you know, as the number. You know. And were the amounts reduced in these second batches, or were the amounts reduced if the amount was too high and there was rejection? Were the amounts different? I mean, lower amounts, so they'd get through?
As far, with regards to the first part of the question, Your Honor, it's correct. I mean, an inference can be made, albeit the government's position is that the more reasonable inference is that because the checks aren't mirror images of each other, the argument fails that they're simply a replacement of the previous batch. It's an indication, Judge. I mean, it's circumstantial evidence. It's something that the sentencing judge, in his discretion, can take into account. And Judge Darrow weighed that fact, and the fact that there are different check numbers doesn't necessarily support the argument that they're mirror images. And that was one of the bits of circumstantial evidence that Judge Darrow took into account. Furthermore, Your Honor, with regard to the second part of that question, there were different check amounts. It wasn't a mirror, each check wasn't a mirror image of the previous check. As indicated by Government's Exhibit 1, the check register, these are different, varying amounts. I see that my time has expired. May I briefly...
Now, the payees were not mirror images either in the $4 million batches?
In the $4 million batches, Your Honor, the payees were all mirror images. They were the payee was RVAL.
Okay. So is there anything that isn't a mirror image, Mr. Diamantados? That other than the check numbers?
The check numbers, Your Honor, and the dates.
And the dates.
That's correct, Judge. May I briefly conclude? I see that my time is
up. Yes, you may conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. In conclusion, the government respectfully requests that this honorable court affirm the decision of the sentencing court. As this court's well aware, under United States versus Johnson, the standard of review here is deference to the sentencing court. With regard specifically to the court's ruling as to loss amount, finding a fact, Your Honors, there is no clear error here. Judge Darrow had ample evidence before him to indicate that the loss amount was in excess of $26 million. And coupled with that, he also had within the record that the other two co-defendants admitted that the intended loss amount was over $20 million. These are all things that Judge Darrow had before him. The numbers, Your Honors, speak for themselves. The intended loss that Mr. Sleeman intended, which was reasonably foreseeable and attributable to him.
Did you just say, Mr. Diamantados, that the other defendants acknowledged what?
That their intended loss amount was in excess of $20 million.
Were there pleas in their cases?
Yes, Your Honor.
What kind of sentences were received in those cases, if you recall?
I do not recall the particular sentences as to each defendant, Your Honor. For those reasons, we respectfully ask that Your Honors affirm. Thank you.
Mr. Schindler?
Your Honor.
Schindler, are you familiar with the co-defendants received?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Rabeno is a fugitive. He went back
to, I think he went to Bulgaria. They were, the government was trying to extradite him from Bulgaria, and he's a fugitive. Mr. Daka is also a fugitive. His plea agreement, he got minor participant. He got a two-level reduction for being a minor participant, and he was the lessee of the apartment. And I tried to argue to Judge Darrow, how can he be, you know, the guy who renting the apartment, and he gets minor participant? I think he got minor participant because he admitted $36.9 million as a loss amount. It's, plea agreements are negotiations. They're settlement agreements. I don't believe they have any bearing on exactly what, you know, the government was pushing a plea agreement with this defendant, and if he would accept 36.9.
Was he sentenced based on a $36 million loss, Mr.
Yes, Your Honor. I think he was.
And you're speaking of Mr.
Salama.
Salama.
The principal one. I think he got 7 or 8 years in jail. Mm-hmm. But he had a prior criminal history of about level 3, I think, or something like that. But as to the other... what had to go through here, I mean, Judge Williams, I think your comment was correct about they had different check numbers, but so what? I mean, if you look at the scheme here is not just let's get on my computer and print out a bunch of checks. These guys did their homework. I mean, they actually went and, like, Mr. Sleeman went to TCF Bank and he bought a $10 cashier's check. And the next thing you know, that $10 cashier's check has a routing number for TCF Bank, and it appears on one of these checks for $99,000. And the account number through which the bank paid out of his cashier's check appears as the account number on the checks, on that check, on that $99,000 check. So these guys had to find legitimate bank accounts, legitimate routing numbers for all these checks. And I think if you looked at the actual checks, you would see, in fact, that each batch is a repeat of the checking account number and the routing number for the bank. You'll see that the payer in a bunch of these is the same account. So it wasn't, I believe that bolsters our argument that, in fact, they were replacement checks for the ones that got intercepted previously. That concludes my argument.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schindler. Thanks to all counsel. Mr. Schindler, you have an additional thanks to the court for accepting the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.